The news from the front made the war against the Kaiser seem closer than ever as I walked that oppressive Oxford night. But I nevertheless looked forward to the game ahead. Miss Dunleavy was a formidable opponent, both on and off the chessboard. Tactically, I had plans to trap her queen. But the true danger lay elsewhere. Her suspicions about the moral nature of my friendship with Sherlock Holmes would be nothing to her alarm when she realized he had enemies, many of them. Up to now, I had been Holmes' apprentice. But what I did not know, as I moved closer to him, was that I was stepping into the deepest of shadows. Shadows so sinister, they hid my darkest nightmares.
We present The Beekeeper's Apprentice by Laurie King, adapted into 4 episodes by Sean Prendergast, with Monica Dolan as Mary Russell and James Fox as Sherlock Holmes. Episode 3, The Segregation of the Queen.
Miss Russell, Miss Dunleavy's gone away. Sick. So, you've got the night off, I reckon, and a pretty girl like you should have company. Somewhere sheltered.
Oh, no, I love a storm. And I don't need anyone else.
But in truth, as I prepared to run back, I felt let down by Miss Dunleavy's absence. She was the only tutor I felt close to. Apart, of course, from the man who had taught me everything he knew. What's that noise, Holmes?
That is the sound of an angry queen. The new queen has had her nuptial flight and is now anxious to murder her rivals in their beds. The worker bees cover the royal cells with thick layers of wax, you see, so she cannot reach the princesses, and they cannot chew their way out to answer her challenge.
What would happen if one of the unhatched queens escaped?
The first queen has the advantage and would almost certainly kill it.
Even though she's going to abandon the hive anyway?
The lust for murder is not a rational thing. In queens, it is an instinctual response.
Ah, Miss Russell. Real nice over, I see. There's a note from an old, elderly woman. She was by, asking for you.
Carefully avoiding the smudged thumbprint on one corner, I opened it. To my astonishment, the contents were no more than an advertisement for a window manufacturer on the Banbury Road.
A very strange sort of message, Miss Russell.
I have rather an eccentric aunt who occasionally tracks me down.
If she returns, shall I bring her up?
I think not, Mr. Thomas. Send someone for me, and I'll come down.
At the top of the stairs, there was a smudge on the doorknob, and tiny, fresh scratches on the inside of my keyhole. I went slowly back down the stairway. Unfortunately, the only other entrance was through the windows that looked out onto a stone courtyard below.
Oh, for God's sake, Russell. It's only 25 feet. Oxford is making you lazy. Sitting on your backside in the library all day.
Slowly I peered over the ledge and saw an old woman. I blinked, and despite the cold and the rain and the cramp in my bleeding fingers, smiled to myself.
Damn you, Holmes! Help me in this window before you have to scrape me off the pavement.
Climb in, Russell. By the way, don't disturb that machine on the desk. It's a bomb.
I suppose you know that brandy's not the optimum treatment for hypothermia. But I'm grateful, Holmes. I had a murderous tutorial, and then I worked in the Bodleian all afternoon. My maths tutor, Miss Dunleavy, I must have spoken of her. Well, we came across some mathematical exercises developed by an old acquaintance of yours.
I assume you speak of Professor Moriarty?
Exactly. I spent the day hunting down some articles he had published. I was going to show them to Miss Dunleavy and then break the news about some of your surviving enemies, but she's been taken ill.
What impression did you have of the man?
Moriarty?
The subtlest of all the beasts in the garden comes to mind. I believe that had I not known the identity of the writer, the words alone would have succeeded in raising my hackles.
Being a good mammal yourself, apparently, rather than a cold-blooded thinking machine such as your teacher is known to be.
Ah, but I've never called you cold-blooded, have I, my dear Holmes?
No, you have not.
So why did you leave the marks on the doorknob?
Because, my dear child, I had to be absolutely certain that despite being tired, cold and hungry, you would pick up the small hints and act correctly.
What is that thing you've bought? Is it really a bomb?
Indeed, but I did not bring it. It was attached to your door when I arrived.
Who wishes to kill me? And how did you know about it?
Well done, Russell. A quick mind is worthless unless you can control the emotions with it as well. Oh.
My God, you're hurt. They tried to kill you first, didn't they? Where are you injured? How badly?
I'm afraid I may have to ask you to change the dressings at some point, but not immediately. The person who set the bomb thinks I'm dying, fortunately. Some poor tramp was run over just after they took me to the hospital, and he's still there with bandages about his head and my name on his chart. And I might add a constable at his side at all times.
Was anyone else hurt? Mrs. Hudson?
Mrs. Hudson is fine. The bomb was in one of the beehives, of all places. There are four bombers I have put away in the past. One is dead. The second has been out for 5 years and become a strong family man. The third was let out 18 months ago. The last escaped and is missing. I deactivated the contraption, but not being entirely up to date on bombs myself, I need an expert to read this particular fingerprint. We shall take it with us when we go.
Where?
To London. To Mycroft, my dear child. My brother, Mycroft. He knows more than the whole of Scotland Yard put together.
A full stomach, a slightly tipsy brain, and the knowledge of a safe place to sleep. What more could a person ask? Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, Miss Russell. I have heard of you, of course, though not from my brother, naturally. How are you, Sherlock?
Better.
Will you see a doctor tonight, Holmes?
I will not see a doctor, no. It must not be known that we are here.
What of the club and the cook? They must know, surely.
The club is discreet. And I told the cook that I was exceedingly hungry.
So no doctor, even Watson?
Especially Watson. Any news of the bomb?
It does look similar to the one you took from the Western Street Bank attempt some years ago.
And yet you know that man Dixon made a success of himself at his father-in-law's music shop and worships his family. An unlikely candidate to try to kill me and my nearest associates.
Holmes, do you think we should ask Watson to move into an hotel for 2 or 3 days?
My God! Russell, could I? Mycroft, you're on the telephone. You talk to him, Russell. Do not let him know where you are or that I am with you. You know his number? Oh, good. Oh, if anything has happened to him through my utter, absolute boneheaded stupidity.
I'll do so, Holmes. I'll tell him to go to an hotel and stay put. I'll make up the story. In the meantime, sleep.
Good advice. I shall take it myself. Good night.
You take the bed, I take the chair. No arguments.
I may smoke a pipe of tobacco on the balcony.
I trust, Holmes, that you will allow your body some rest tonight.
Russell, there are times when the infirmity of the body may be used as a means of concentrating the mind.
No doubt that marvellous concentration explains why you neglected to include Watson in your calculations. Get some sleep, for God's sake, Holmes.
Good night, Russell.
I hope I've not missed breakfast entirely. Uncle John! But how?
We have been run to earth.
Elementary, my dear Holmes. Where would Mary be if you were both in danger but with you? And where would you go but to your brothers? Have some tea, Mary. Though I should like an apology for you telling me an untruth.
I am sorry, Uncle John.
Quite all right, my dear. Just remember that I've been watching out for myself for a long time now. I'm hardly a babe in the woods.
But you... How did you get here? And when did you shave off your moustache?
Put on your alter ego, Watson.
This outfit, complete with epaulette belongs to the doorman at the hotel. It was just like old times, Holmes, really it was. I left the hotel by the kitchen entrance, through three restaurants and Victoria Station. Took two trams, a horse bus and a cab.
But why, Uncle John? I told you that I'd ring you.
I'm a doctor. It was my duty to come.
Goodness and mercy shall plague me all the days of my life, Watson. Why should I let you do any further damage to my epidermis?
You will allow me to examine your injuries, because I will not leave until I've done so.
Morning, you. Yeah.
Oh, read it, Russell. Oh, damn you, Watson. Be careful.
I see it. Former killed by own device. Watson Holmes target.
Oh.
Bottom of the page. A large bomb exploded shortly after midnight this morning at the home of Dr. John Watson.
Oh, God,
apparently killing the man who was in the act of setting it, identified as Mr. John Dixon of Reading.
My home?
It seems, old friend, that we owe considerable and deeply felt thanks to Russell for pecking you off to the hotel.
Yes. I must go.
The article states that no one was hurt.
Yes,
you must stay here, Watson. Huh? They know you are not dead and may try again. Dixon was no fool. He would not have blown himself up. He was being punished for missing you.
Although, I suppose a group of criminals can overlook essential organization.
For pity's sake, Mycroft, it's not the government. If he was employed to obliterate me and everyone close to me...
I suppose I should have been next. You're right. Accident and suicide are unlikely. Could a bomber's boss bomb a bomber?
Pull yourself together, Mycroft.
It makes it difficult to hire help in the future. Oh, well, I shall make inquiries as to further progress. Come, Watson, let me get you a drink. You look as though you need it.
Yes.
Most irritating that Dixon is no longer available. If only I'd been able to reach you earlier, I might have caught him setting your bomb.
You did not, because Sunday's attempt to blow you into many untidy bits left you unconscious until dusk on Monday.
I did not say I was unconscious.
What made you come to me? Did you have any reason?
No. No, it was a fixation visited upon an abused brain. Reason demanded I stay upon the scene of the crime with perhaps a telephone call to put you on your guard, but... I tell you the truth, I found it impossible to retain a logical train of thought. It was the most peculiar side effect of concussion I've ever experienced. At dawn on Tuesday, all I could think of was reaching your door by dusk. And when I found I was able to walk, I walked.
And when you approached my rooms... You must have passed the bomber in the street.
The only faces I saw were hunched up against the rain. But how did our adversary know of you? Your name appears on no publication. Although our collaboration is no doubt common knowledge in the village.
You need a name, Holmes.
Yes. I think the time has come for me to renew my contacts with the criminal world in this fair city.
Today? Surely your brother here...
Mycroft moves in circles rather more exalted than I have in mind.
I shall join you.
That you most definitely will not do. Now, don't look at me like that, Russell. I am not protecting your gentle virtue, although I admit there are sights to be seen underground in London that might give even your eyes pause. It is a job for a specific old man, a man already known to be an occasional visitor to the dregs of London society. A companion would cause comment, and tongues would not flap so freely.
But you're back.
He's very well, thank you.
You wish me to remain here today?
That will not be necessary, as long as you are not followed. In fact, it is probably best if you are not here, and if they are aware of that. Where did Mycroft stash the box of makeup last time? Mycroft! Watson! In here!
What's the plan?
Well, I shall go snooping, and then if I have learnt nothing, by 7 o'clock there will be little point in persisting. And as it is an Italian night at Covent Garden, shall we agree to meet there at 7:45?
What is it?
I will leave here now dressed as my brother. Huh? Russell will leave in 20 minutes dressed as you, Watson. Mycroft, would you kindly find us some suitable padding and a large quantity of sticking plaster? Now, I'll tear up some of these blankets while you take yourself to increase your girth. You take off your shirt, Russell.
Is it really necessary, Sherlock? Perhaps the sticking plaster could be put on over her clothing.
What? Oh, yes, I suppose so. I shall turn to the right out of the door, as my disguise is more realistic. Russell will turn to the left, so that they will see her clearly only from a distance. 20 minutes after she leaves, the two of you will depart together, hatless, and stroll slowly down the street to the right. And for God's sake, be careful.
Holmes, Holmes, old friend, are you going to be all right? The pain, I mean. Do you want something? I have a bottle of morphia in my bag.
After all these times, you offer me morphine? My dear Watson,
You do have a talent for reducing things to their proper perspective. You know I never indulge when I'm on a case.
As I left, I was aware of eyes on me. Watson and Mycroft Holmes watching from the window above, but other, hostile eyes also from the street. Following Holmes's precise instructions, I hailed a cab, then changed my mind. I walked west, as if towards Green Park, then hailed another. I turned it away too, and a street later, finally got warily into a third. At the building Holmes had told me to go to, I went inside, climbed to the third floor, watching the stairs below me, and through the tea room on that floor to a passageway, a further set of stairs, and at last a door marked storage room. The key Holmes had given me let me in. The storage room was one of Holmes's bolt holes. It was a windowless, stuffy, oddly shaped room. Three metal dressmaker's racks, bulging with clothes, took up a quarter of the floor space, and an enormous dressing table littered with tubes, pencils and pots, and overhung by a wall-sized mirror surrounded by small electric light bulbs, took up another quarter. The kitchen consisted of a stained hand basin, a minuscule geyser, a gas ring, and two pots. After rummaging around in the clothes rack, I found an evening suit and tweed plus fours cheek by jowl with a linen chasuble, the brocade trousers and tunic of a Maharaja, and finally, a stunning scarlet evening dress. I would easily pass for a young thing out for a day in town. I darkened the rims of my spectacles with some odd brown fingernail enamel and decided reluctantly that I should have to leave them off for much of the day, as any other vain young myopic thing would do. I gathered up Watson's clothes, turned off the lights, took a deep breath, and, with my hand inside my bag, opened the door. No bombs went off, no bullets flew, no rough hands grabbed at me. I closed the door behind me and went off into the dangerous night.
This isn't the right way to Covent Garden.
Yes, miss, this is the faster way. Away from the heavy traffic, miss.
All right, you. Now, look, I'll have a revolver and I will shoot you if you do not stop immediately.
Nah, miss, you don't want to be starting doing that now.
I'm feeling more like it every moment. Stop this cab. Now.
I can't do that, miss. I really cannot.
Why not?
Because, miss, we'll miss the curtain if we do.
You utter... Damn you, Holmes. That's the second time you've played your blasted tricks on me in 3 days. If you do it again and I have a gun in my hand, I won't be responsible, you hear? As sure as my mother's name's Mary McCarthy, I won't be responsible for my temper.
Yes, miss. Your mother's name was not Mary McCarthy.
No, it was Judith Klein. Just don't scare me again, please. I've been walking round frightened and blind since I left your brother's rooms, and I'm tired.
Apologies, Russell. My twisted sense of humour has had me in trouble before. Pax?
Pax. There's a man coming over.
Ah, the redoubtable Billy. An old friend of mine. He will look after the cab while you and I relax. Come, Russell. Scarlet gown is glorious, but you look distinctly underdressed without a glass of champagne in your hand.
Holmes could be charming when he so desired, but that evening between acts, he positively scintillated with stories about the primary cast members, his conversations with the lamas in Tibet, his most recent monographs on varieties of lipstick, the peculiarities of modern tire marks, the structure of the aria we were about to hear, and a thousand other topics.
I'm so sorry, Russell. I seem to have been talking for the entire evening.
Holmes, I realize the question sounds presumptuous, but
Do you find there are aspects of yourself with which you feel most comfortable?
Who am I, do you mean? Well, do you know what a fugue is?
Are you changing the subject?
No.
I see. Two discrete sections of a fugue may not appear related unless the listener has received the entire work, at which point the music's internal logic makes clear the relationship.
A conversation with you is most invigorating, Russell. That might have taken 20 frustrating minutes for Watson.
Cannot be all that many of your enemies who hate you enough to kill off not only you, but your friends as well. Who has the money to hire bombers and watchers, and the wits to put all of this conspiracy together?
I sat up until the wee hours contemplating precisely that question, Russell, with absolutely no results. I cannot call to mind one who fits with what we know of the mastermind behind these attacks.
There is a mastermind, you say.
Well, a mind, certain, intelligent, painstaking, at least moderately wealthy, and absolutely ruthless.
Sounds like Moriarty.
Yes, remarkably like him.
Holmes, you can't mean...
No, Watson's account is accurate enough. The man is dead. No, this feels like another Moriarty. Come on us unawares.
A bomb! Outside!
My God, Billy!
Ah, the police are here already. That should have ruined our chances of finding evidence.
Ah, Mr. Holmes. Your man Billy got a nasty crack on the head, that's all.
Oh, no. Russell, I should like to introduce you to an old friend of mine. This is Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard. His father was a colleague of mine on a number of cases. Lestrade, this is my associate, Miss Mary Russell.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, always a comedian you were. I forgot your little jokes for a minute.
Have you ever known me to joke about my profession, Lestrade? Ever?
No.
Exactly. How is Billy?
He looked like a clout on the head followed by a bit of chloroform. He was already coming around when they took him off.
Thank you for that, Inspector. Have you already gone over the cab?
No, we haven't touched it. Look inside, that's all. Quick thinking chap, that Fowler. He'll get a promotion.
Inspector, that, I believe, is the individual over there.
Why, yes, how did you guess? Did you know him then, miss?
As far as I know, I've never seen him before tonight.
But then how?
Oh, it is too obvious. An older man in a low position can either have got there by being, well, how shall we say, of limited mental resource, which according to you he is not, or by backsliding. It could not have been a criminal act that pushed him down the ladder, or he would not still be in uniform. Which personality flaw it is can be readily ascertained by the broken veins in his face, while the deep furrows around his mouth indicate either pain or sorrow in recent years. I should suspect, as his body seems unimpaired, that the latter is to blame, which would explain the abuse of alcohol, and that in turn accounts for the demotion in rank. However, his general competency and the fact you mention the possibility of promotion tell me that he has passed through the crisis and will now serve as an example to the men around him. It's really quite elementary, Inspector.
Yes. Sir, Mr. Holmes, I do see what you mean. I don't know how you've done it, but it could have been you saying that. You're absolutely right, miss. His wife and daughter were killed 4 years ago, and a year ago he pulled himself together. You'll be back up there in no time, I think. Come with me.
I'll get a lamp so that we can look at your cab. Fowler!
Russell, that last lamp is a bit over dramatic, don't you think?
A good apprentice learns from her master, sir.
This is where we found your man.
What do you make of this, Russell?
Two pairs of feet. One has been in the mud today, the other... Is that oil?
Yes, Russell. But there will be a third somewhere. At the door to the cab? No. Well, perhaps inside. Lestrade, your men will go over the whole cab for fingerprints, I take it?
Oh, yes, sir. I've sent for an expert. He shouldn't be here before too long. New man, but seems good. MacReady, his name is.
Oh, yes. Ronald MacReady. Interesting article of his. Comparing walls with the personality traits of habitual criminals, didn't you think?
I didn't have to see it, Mr. Holmes.
Pity. Still, never too late. Lestrade, set up an incident room.
Yes, I was about to do that very thing. Sergeant, find out if there's a back room in that shop.
What did you think, Russell?
I'm beginning to suspect that this opponent of yours knows you well enough to be able to take your thoughts into account when planning his actions.
Well, my immediate thought is to undertake a search of this area with a fine-tooth comb. Never let it be said that I was a man to disappoint my enemies.
Ah, Russell, there you are. Constable Fowler, fetch her tea. She looks frozen.
Right, Mr. Holmes. There you go, miss.
Thank you.
Well, Russell, what have you found?
One button with a scrap of brown tweed attached, cut recently from its garment by a sharp instrument. Another thick smudge of light brown clay, and one blonde hair, not my own, considerably shorter. Plus a great deal of dust and rubbed about dirt and debris, indicating that the cab had not been cleaned in some time.
It's also not been used in some time, Russell. So your three finds are undoubtedly worthy of our attention.
And you, Holmes? What have you found?
Several things of interest. But I need to smoke a pipe over them, perhaps two, before I have anything to say.
Will we be here long, Holmes?
Another hour, perhaps. Why?
I've been drinking champagne, now coffee, now tea. I cannot last another hour without doing something about it.
Of course. Had the older man, Fowler, show you the facilities in the park. Take a lamp.
Sir. Constable Fowler, come in here at once.
Miss,
go and get Mr. Holmes.
Is something wrong, miss?
No, something is not wrong for a change. Just get him.
I shouldn't leave you
alone. I'll be safe. Just go.
All right, miss. Stop the phone. What have you found?
Some traces of mud and a blonde hair. This is not yet thought through, but... Holmes, could the man we're looking for be a woman?
In The Beekeeper's Apprentice, Mary Russell was played by Monica Dolan and Sherlock Holmes by James Fox. Mycroft was played by Gavin Muir and Watson by Sean Prendergast. All other parts were played by members of the company. The Beekeeper's Apprentice was written by Laurie King, dramatized by Sean Prendergast, and directed by Melanie Harris.